From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
San Mateo.
San Francisco, Mission Dolores Park.
Financial District near the Tenderloin.
San Bruno.
North Sunnyvale.
Downtown Palo Alto, my beloved.
Redwood City.
Coming up, a San Francisco house that tweets.
Check it out. I was in the news again. And I totally didn't notice.
Then we'll rent a movie the old-fashioned way.
You know, the whole ad campaign is like, oh, you'll be so happy you never have to go to a video store again. Those pesky video stores that are just, it's like, we're not the dentist, you know, we're not the DMV.
And we go inside San Francisco's oldest indie record store.
You know, I don't think downloading has really affected our store that much. A lot of the stuff that we sell is not readily available on iTunes or whatever.
You know what's readily available now? Cross Currents. These days, our technology is getting smarter. We don't just talk on our phones, we talk to them.
Okay, Google, what's a double fisherman's knot?
The double and triple fisherman's knot are used in arboriculture.
She got it right, man.
Yeah, see?
That's an ad for Google's latest version of its voice recognition app. And as we all know, Siri is already a household name. And speaking of houses, our homes are getting smarter, too. There are thermostats that you can control from your cell phone and smoke detectors that will text you if there's a fire. San Franciscan Tom Coates has taken this technology one step further. He's designed his home to track its vitals and tweet them out to the world, all triggered by a network of Wi-Fi-enabled sensors. KALW's Liz Pfeffer met up with Coates for an offline introduction to the only home in San Francisco with its own Twitter following. Here's the story.
Siri announces me as I get through the gate at Tom Coates' house.
Hello. Nice to see you.
Your destination is on the left.
It was pretty fitting because technology has a mind of its own around here.
This is my little floor cleaning robot. Hopefully it will come out in a second and then I can turn it off. Oh, there we are.
No, come back.
There we go.
Great. So, tell me a little bit about this place. It's like a little cottage.
Yeah, it's a little earthquake cottage.
Coates lives in a bright two-story cottage in the Mission District, one of 5,000 built for refugees of the 1906 earthquake. You would never suspect this 100-year-old home is leading a techno-animistic double life, that the rooms have tiny portals connecting the built world to the internet world.
So the new technologies come along all the time, and nothing that I've done in this house is particularly complicated. Nothing that I've done is really very expensive. Like, every piece of equipment in here was bought off the internet. There's no extra kind of programming or code written for it at all. It's all pre-existing services. Anyone could do it.
These portals are sensors, little devices that detect and react to different human and environmental triggers. Coates' house always welcomes him home with a tweet, and the lights in the office automatically turn on at sundown.
There is a system called Wemo from Belkin, and I have light switches for my main lights in my sitting room and for a neon sign I have in the sitting room as well, and for each of the rooms upstairs.
You can see the long bridge between this and the technology in the movie Her. But instead of one super intelligent computer running the show, Coates connects to the objects in his house with Wi-Fi and easy-to-use mobile apps.
I also have down here by my plant, I have a thing called a Twine, which is from a company called Super Mechanical, and that can measure all kinds of things. But I've got it hooked up to get the temperature and whether that plant in the corner has been is being watered or not.
In front of the TV, there's a Belkin motion sensor that knows if there's activity in the living room.
And next to it, a webcam by a company called Dropcam that I can see what's going on in the house at any time through my phone. So one of the things that I really like is that if I'm not at home and someone comes in, the motion sensor will pick that up. The house will then tweet at me to say,
"Hey, Tom, there's someone in the house. Is that you?"
If it isn't me, I can turn on the webcam and have a look immediately and see who's in the house. I can turn all the lights around them and see what's going on if it's too dark. And the Dropcam even has a little speaker in it, so I can actually speak through my mobile phone and say, "What are you doing in my house?" Or I can, obviously, more likely, call the police.
On one hand, this seems like a great security system. But Coates also has to give up some privacy to communicate with his house on Twitter. When he checks in on Foursquare, his house tweets it publicly.
Looks like Tom's gone out. I saw him check in at In-N-Out Burger.
House of Coates has more than 1,000 followers, but anyone can see the feed. And Coates is fine with it.
I think more it's just that kind of sense of wanting to have some kind of connection with your home, and both in a kind of like slightly woolly hippie way, but also in a, you know, when I'm traveling, when I'm anywhere, I can just check in and see how the house is doing. And that's really pleasant and nice for me. Also, of course, the plant tells me when it needs watering, although you wouldn't be able to tell by looking at it.
All of the house's capabilities are enabled through a simple website called If This, Then That. It's a simple way of setting automatic responses based on a certain prompt. So if Coates steps on his internet-connected scale, House of Coates tweets,
Tom just weighed himself. I'm going to leave it up to him to tell you if it's good news, though.
Or if the thermostat reaches a certain level.
It's getting warm in here today. I'd say it's probably reached something like 72. That's a little warmer than I usually like it.
It gives the house its own unique character.
I suppose in the, you know, a long time ago, it would be called animism. It's like the belief that objects had their own kind of spirits and personalities. But then, yeah, anthropomorphizing to some extent. Or an avatar. You know, my house is an avatar on the internet, and it uses it to communicate with me.
And the rest of the world also sees its personality.
I made a tweet the other day. It said to people, you do realize I'm just a house, right? You know, and that you'd be surprised the responses it gets. Because it's friendly, people like talking to it. You know, because it's just a house with a smile and just says nice things, people start conversations with my house all the time. And unfortunately, it's not quite yet able to respond. That'll come with time, obviously. But in the meantime, I do it for it.
Coates says he's going to keep playing with his house, take its connectedness farther, get one of those Nest thermostats, or install door locks he can operate remotely.
Anyone could just buy a few things that they think are interesting, put them in their homes, and suddenly get access to a new range of weird superpowers. You know, that's what I'm after, like new superpowers for people, new superpowers for objects, superpowers for fridges.
There are different ways to look at Coates' pad. Maybe it's like the $6 million man house. Or maybe it's some kind of a half-animate Frankenhome. To Coates, it's something cuter.
Yeah, it sort of turned into this very nice personality and very nice kind of like weird little Twitter friend that that I like hanging out with.
Whatever you see for Tom Coates, it's just home, tweet home. In San Francisco, I'm Liz Pfeffer for Cross Currents.
If you'd like to find out what Tom Coates' house is up to today, find a link to his house's Twitter account at klw.org. Click Cross Currents.
Check it out. I was in the news again, and I totally didn't notice.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. We live in the age of tweeting houses, but it wasn't that long ago that we were living without the internet. If you're old enough, you can probably remember how you had to leave your house to buy things. If you wanted to watch your favorite show, you had to turn on your TV when it aired. And if you wanted to enjoy a movie at home, you had to get up, go out, and visit a special kind of store. On Valencia Street in San Francisco, such a store still exists.
People walk in and be like, wow, this is a video. I've heard about these places. Yeah, you give them money and then you have to bring it back. And, you know, like they don't get it.
Christy Colcord is one of the owners of Lost Weekend Video. She says that while demand for video rentals has plummeted, she and her co-owners have found other ways to keep their patrons entertained. KLW's Audrey Dilling paid a visit to the store to see how it's evolved.
A couple on an evening stroll down Valencia Street just came to a stop outside Lost Weekend Video. They're peering in through the big front window.
It looked kind of interesting. I wanted to check it out because I haven't seen a video store in a long time.
That's Abel Martinez.
These days, I watched a lot of pirated movies.
Well, at least he's honest. And he's not alone. Almost half of all Americans have illegally downloaded a show or movie they wanted to watch. Many of those people probably used to go to video stores, like Martinez's partner, Maria Turner Yolveras.
All my life, up to about 5 years ago.
Now she only goes if she can't find something online.
You go to the video store if you can't find it on Netflix?
Yeah.
There is no video stores anymore.
No, there is.
He's kind of right. The number of independent video stores in the country has fallen by over half since 2004. And last year, the national chain Blockbuster closed all its stores. But Lost Weekend Video has managed to survive.
Lost Weekend.
On a typical night, you might walk in and see a movie playing on the two big TVs inside. Tonight, it's basketball. About a dozen people mill around the aisles, looking at the rows of DVDs and VHS tapes stacked spine out. The place seems welcoming. And co-founder David Hawkins says that was the original point.
In my mind was a video store that wasn't so large it was intimidating, nor so niche that it was frustrating.
It all started back in the late 90s. Hawkins and two friends were all working in the music industry, but wanted to do something different. Co-owner Christy Colcord had an idea.
I suggested that we maybe think about opening a video store because we could sleep late and it was just talk about movies all day.
Soon after that, they started stockpiling their favorite cult and indie films and storing them at her place.
I had the biggest apartment down on Albion Street, and my whole living room just became, like, every bookshelf, every pile was full of, you know, VHS. They took up a lot of space, too.
When they got to a couple thousand titles, they opened up shop. Colcord says there were a lot fewer businesses on Valencia at the time, but they did have competition. A couple other small video stores, plus Tower and Blockbuster, were nearby. Colcord says Lost Weekend filled a particular need.
At the time, it was a lot of artists and filmmakers and old San Francisco types. So they were people who were really into movies and media culture, you know, so they were very enthusiastic about the kinds of films that we were into, you know, getting foreign, you know, stuff that you couldn't get at the chains.
Even when Netflix first came on the scene, Colcord says Lost Weekend wasn't really sweating it.
The economy was booming, so people just did both. You know, they had Netflix. And back then, you know, there wasn't as much streaming. So they would have a Netflix account. They would put stuff in their queue. And then the, like, Fassbender movie that showed up, they would not be in the mood for that night because it was more like, in theory, they wanted to watch it, you know?
But when the economy collapsed in 2008, people had to choose one or the other. David Hawkins says many of Lost Weekend's diehard customers lost their jobs and left the city.
And in the old days, we were a recession-proof type business because, you know, spending $3 on a video was about as cheap a date as you can have.
But today, people can watch as many movies as they want for less than $10 a month. So they had to think of new ways to bring people into the store.
You guys looking for a show by chance? Come back this way. Yeah.
About 2 years ago, Lost Weekend started holding movie screenings in the store's basement, which they dubbed the Cine Cave. There are old red velvet movie theater seats down there, which hold a cozy 20 people or so. Soon after the movie nights began, the store's owners started experimenting with live entertainment, stand-up comedy and improv.
Yeah! Give it up for yourselves for coming on out to our show!
There used to be just a few comedy shows a month, but they were such a hit, there are now a few a week. And the basement got relabeled the Cynic Cave. People pay $5 to $10 a show to watch local comedians and occasionally big names.
I am pretty gay. I'm so gay that three of my favorite three songs are by Ace of Base.
You never know what you might see.
Blair Shertalk is in the audience tonight. She says she comes to comedy shows seeking something she can't get at home.
It's pretty much the energy that you get from the performers because, you know, it might be scripted, it might be improvised, but anything can happen. And I think nothing can replace that.
What are your three favorite Ace of Base songs?
The original purpose of the shows was to draw in more customers and make a little extra cash. But the performances have also created a place for people to come together in real time and space, an alternative to watching something alone in your room on a laptop. David Hawkins wants to remind people that it actually can be fun to do things the old-fashioned way, no matter what Netflix says.
You know, the whole ad campaign is like, oh, you'll be so happy you never have to go to a video store again, those pesky video stores that are just, it's like, we're not the dentist, you know, we're not the DMV.
He says he can see the effects of technology on our lives just by looking out on Valencia Street. Of course, He relates that to a movie.
It feels a little like The Invasion of the Body Snatchers at times, where you're just like, either the streets are completely dead, where they never used to be, or it's just a very different feeling.
But not all change is bad, according to Christy Colcord.
Valencia Street's not going to be what it was in 1995. And frankly, in 1995, people used to poop in our front step, you know, so it wasn't a dream time. But what we can continue to serve as is like this reminder of the community that Valencia Street used to have in terms of like artists and musicians and creative people and people who wanted to talk to each other and didn't want to sit in a box.
To get that, though, the conversation or the movies or live entertainment, you might just have to leave your house.
So you're on disc 3 now? Yeah, that looks right.
In San Francisco, right, so I'm Audrey Dilling for Cross Currents.
And this one's going to be due on Wednesday before we close, 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Since we first aired this story a year ago, Lost Weekend Video has faced the possibility of shutting its doors due to rising rents and declining business. But they just announced they've come up with a new plan. It includes creating a searchable catalog of their collection online and partnering with a courier service and delivering those videos to your door. Find a link to their Indiegogo campaign at klw.org and click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. A couple of doors down the street from Lost Weekend is a place that brings together the sounds of the world, from Ethiopian jazz to Brazilian tropicalia to Norwegian thrash metal, and even the songs of frogs. It's called Aquarius Records. Founded back in 1970, it's hailed as one of the best independent record stores in the country by both Spin and Paste magazines. KALW's Zoe Bresny takes us there and tells us how it has helped to keep the light shining on underground music in the Bay Area. And a note to our listeners, all of the music and reviews in this story are from the bins and newsletters of Aquarius Records.
Black Mesa is washed out and woozy, twang-flecked and atmospheric, evoking burnt orange sunsets over wide-open expanses of barren scrub, of slow-moving stars in a pitch-black sky, an alien abstract Appalachia wedded to slow-burn psychedelia.
Every other week, Aquarius Records sends out a 25,000-word newsletter with music reviews that resemble the poetic jazz liner notes of years past, oozing with sensual detail and personality.
A cinematic score to an endless wander through burnt black wastelands.
You know, it was sort of necessary because, you know, we get this weird record of deers mating or ice melting or some weird metal record that's made by a dwarf who lives in Norway.
Andy Connors owns Aquarius Records.
Those are the elements that are cool, and there's a way to describe it where even someone who isn't like a weird music guy or a weird music person will be like, that sounds crazy, I totally want to hear that.
Connors looks like a metalhead with his shaggy long locks and multitudinous skull tattoos, but he's also got a warm demeanor, an earnest enthusiasm for the store. Neither he nor co-owner Alan Horrocks makes much money preserving its legacy.
I think it's all just really passion born of just being really into music still.
Aquarius started back in 1970, when record stores were more of a necessity for music lovers. Connor says it evolved over time.
Not changing dramatically, but always staying in touch with like the underground, and whether it was in the 70s and it was punk rock, or now where it's like garage rock and black metal.
The first time I walked into Aquarius Records to interview Connors, the in-store speakers were blasting Francis Bebe. He's an electronic musician from Cameroon, Africa.
Francis Bebé's new track is an over 8 minute long number that starts off with tinkling thumb piano before blaring synth stabs, burbling keys, and ticking drum machine rhythms kick in. Pretty soon, the song has become dense with loops and layers, repeating vocals about bananas and potatoes and politics, creating a cheerfully confusing mantra.
I want a banana, some water, and dance on a new track. I want a banana, some water, and dance on a new track.
Every year, Connors writes about 1,000 of Aquarius's 2,000 new music reviews. The prose is lush, idiosyncratic, and ecstatic, often verging on poetry, not at all like the crisp, snarky stuff you read in most music reviews. The newsletter is one of the reasons the store has attracted devoted followers from around the world. Instead of hunting down their music via a slew of different labels, people rely on Aquarius to alert them about new under-the-radar bands.
That's what we do because that's what we love. And so I used to use the analogy of Aquarius Records, having Aquarius Records and owning Aquarius Records and sort of running it and doing the list and stuff was sort of like making mixtapes, but turning that into a business somehow, you know, and on some level, that's really what the store is.
And do you have customers who come in who say, hey, I came here from Portugal or I'm traveling from Japan and I have always followed your mailing list?
Oh, yeah, we have that a lot. And oftentimes they come straight from the airport and they have their suitcases and stuff. And which from my traveling, I'm kind of a super record store nerd too. But my knee jerk is to be like, why did you come here first? Why didn't you go to your hotel room and relax? But they're... It's super cool that people are so excited.
Baldwin takes on Judas Priest's Winter and nails it. The main riff of the original sounds perfect on a steel string, brooding and ominous. Beneath that, deep swells of buzzing guitar drone pulses and throbs. And the vocals, a reverb-drenched, high-pitched croon, are complete with vibrato and little trills.
Aquarius is entwined with the history of rock and roll. In the early days, members of the seminal punk band The Dead Kennedys met through an ad on the store's bulletin board, and hardcore act Husker Du performed at their backyard barbecues. Blondie and the Ramones also made appearances. Now beloved San Francisco favorites, such as the experimental band known as Wooden Ships and the trance-inducing cosmic sounds of the group Moon Duo, attribute their success in large part to Aquarius's enthusiastic support.
Both those bands are a big deal, and you know, obviously we weren't the only part, but with some bands often we were either the first or we were one of the loudest.
Indie stores are disappearing rapidly, even in a city as progressive as San Francisco. In 2005, there were 52 specialty record stores in the Bay Area. I called them all, and 11 are now gone. The closures include famous shops such as Reverb, a staple for electronic DJs, and Shaxel, a store devoted entirely to heavy metal. But Aquarius carries on.
I think a lot of stores, you know, have other, for better or for worse, have other things driving their business. You know, oh, we'll sell a billion of this, we'll sell a bunch of this. And we don't, unfortunately, have that. So it's more like, from a business standpoint, it's probably a terrible idea. But from just a cool, beautiful art thing, I think it's much more satisfying.
In San Francisco, I'm Zoe Bresny for Cross Currents.
If you'd like to join the Aquarius mailing list, find out how at kalw.org and click on Cross Currents.
And
And if you want to get in touch with us by email, we're at news@klw.org, or find us on Facebook and Twitter @KALW. Better yet, give us a call. The number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Olivia Cueva, Sandhya Dirks, Rachel Dornhelm, Angela Johnston, Christina Loring, Ted Muldoon, Seth Samuel, Judy Silber, Stephen Short, Liza Veal, and Todd Whitney. Chris Hoff engineered today's show. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And this music is by Pacific Vibrations. They're from San Francisco's Outer Sunset and play a mix of reggae, funk, folk, and rock. And they play this Saturday during Neck of the Woods on Clement Street in San Francisco. It's reggae night. Music starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Trying to do my thing, whatever others may say. They stroll by earning 9 to 5. It never suited me for the suits and rides. Turning dimes the American way. Doggy dog world, another hustling play. Get it or love it, just the way it is. Take it or leave it, gotta love this bitch. It's life.